Why were you trying to kill these men? The water surged, struck her in the face. She spat it out, wiped water from her eyes, hitched herself a little higher. She only knew where the River King was by his black bulk against the sky, the shine of his eyes. I wasn't, he said. Her arms had begun to shake. She cursed her lingering weakness. No, she demanded, breathless.
The silver, he said. I was to drown the silver.
Silver? Why?
The bear desired it of me. What do Cherti care for men's silver? She panted. I know not. I only know the bear bid me to do it.
Very well, said Vasya. It is done now. Will you quiet the water, River King? The Vodyanoi rumbled with displeasure.
Why? Those men with their dust and their horses and their filth fouled my river. They left no offering, no acknowledgement. Better they drown with their silver. No, she said. Men and Cherti can share this world. We cannot, snapped the Vodyanoi. They will not stop. The bells will not stop. The cutting of trees and the fouling of water and the forgetting will not stop until there are none of us left. We can, she insisted. I see you. You will not fade. You are not enough.
The black lips had pulled back again, revealing the needles of his teeth.
And the bear is stronger than you.
The bear is not here, said Vasya. I am here, and you will not kill these men. Quiet the water. The Vodyanoi only hissed, mouth opening wide. Vasya did not recoil, but reached out a scraped hand and touched his warty face. She said,
Listen to me and be at peace, River King.
The Vodyanoi felt like living water, cold and silken and alive under her hand. She committed the texture of his skin to memory. He shrank away, his mouth closed.
Must it be so? He asked her in a different voice.
He sounded suddenly afraid. But beneath it was a thread of agonized hope. Vasya thought of what her great-grandmother had said, that the Cherti didn't really wish to fight at all. Vasya took a deep breath.
Yes, she said. It must.
Then I will remember, said the Vodyanoi. The raging force of the current slacked. Vasya drew a relieved breath.
You must also remember, sea maiden.
The Vodyanoi sank, gurgling beneath the water, and vanished before she could ask him why he called her that. The level of the river began to drop. By the time Vasya dragged herself ashore, it was only Muddy Creek again. The man that she had rescued was standing on the bank when she came wading out. She was bedraggled, panting and shivering. But at least she wasn't sleepy. She jerked to a halt when she saw him waiting, quelled a startled impulse to flee. He raised his hands.
Do not be afraid, boy. You saved my life.
Vasya didn't speak. She didn't trust him. But the water was at her back, the night, the forest, the midnight road. All promised refuge. She was afraid of the man with an instinctive fear. But it wasn't like Moscow, where walls hemmed her in. So she stood fast and said,
If you are grateful, Gaspodin, then tell me your name and your purpose here.
He stared. Vasya realized belatedly that he had thought she was a peasant boy, but that she didn't sound like one.
I suppose it is of no matter now, he said after a grim silence. I am called Vladimir Andreyevich, the Prince of Sierpukhov. I, with my men, was to take a tribute of silver to Sarai, to the Puppet Khan and his Temnik, Mamai. For Mamai has mustered an army and will not disperse it until he has his tax. But now the silver is gone.
Her brother-in-law, sent by Dmitri on an errand meant to avert a war, now thwarted. Vasya understood why affinity had brought her here. Knew also why the bear had wanted to drown the silver. Why bring down Dmitri himself
when he could get Tatars to do it. Perhaps the silver could be found, but not in darkness. Could she force the Vodyanoi to retrieve it? She hesitated between the forest and the water. Vladimir was considering her, narrow-eyed. "Who are you?" "You wouldn't believe me if I told you," she assured him, with perfect honesty. His sharp gray eyes took in the fading cuts and bruises on her face. "I mean you no harm," he said. "Wherever you ran away from, I won't send you back. Would you like something to eat?" The unexpected kindness almost drove tears from her. She realized how bewildered and frightened she had been, and still was. But she had no time for tears. "No," she said, "I thank you." She had decided. To end the bear's mischief once and for all, she needed the Winter King. So she fled, a wraith in the darkness. Chapter 15. Farther, Stranger Countries. The moon was hanging near the horizon, and it was still endless, sapping night. Vasya was barefoot, and now she was cold. Dietgrib popped out from behind a stump, clutching Vasya's basket. He looked outraged. "You are wet," he said, "and you are lucky I kept you in sight. What if you and I and the horse had all gone into different midnights? You would have been lost." Vasya's teeth were chattering. "I didn't think of it," she said to her little ally. "You are so wise." Dietgrib looked a little mollified. "I am going to have to find somewhere to dry my clothes," Vasya managed. "Where is Pojar?" "There," said Dietgrib, pointing to a glimmer in the darkness. "I kept you both in sight." Vasya, in gratitude, bowed deeply and sincerely before him, and then she said, "Can you find a place where no one will see if I build a fire?" Grumbling, he did. She laid a fire and then hesitated, looking at the wood, feeling the rage and terror and flame in her soul, just waiting to be let out. The sticks went up in a shower of sparks, almost before she thought of it, and reality at once yawed at her feet. The infinite darkness of this place already weighed on her. Now it felt 100 times worse. Her shaking hand crept to the lump in her clothes, where the Domovaya had sewn the wooden nightingale. Her hand closed around it. It felt like an anchor. A light gleamed through the thick trees. Pojar came out of the dark, mincing in the bracken. She shook her mane. "Stop making magic, foolish girl. You will be as mad as the old woman. It is easier than you'd think to lose yourself in midnight." Her ears flicked. "If you go mad, I am leaving you here." "Please don't. I will try not to go mad," Vasya said hoarsely, and the mare snorted. Then she went to graze. Vasya stripped and began the tedious process of drying her clothes. How she wanted to sleep now and wake up in light, but she couldn't. So she stood and paced naked, pinching her arms, going away from the fire so that the chill drove her to alertness. She was standing, wondering if her clothes were dry enough to keep her from freezing, when she heard a squeal from Pojar. She turned to see Midnight's black horse, almost indistinguishable from the night, step into the firelight. "Have you brought your rider here to offer more advice?" Vasya asked the horse, not very kindly.
"Don't be silly," said Pojar to Vasya. "I called him. Voron."
She gave the black horse a wicked look, and the stallion licked his lips submissively.
"The swan is farther off than I thought, and Voron knows better than I how to get to her. He is more used to the ways of this place. I am getting tired of wandering about, especially when you make it hard for me to keep you in sight. At this speed, we aren't going to make it before you have to sleep."
She fixed Vasya with both ears.
"Twice you have saved me, in Moscow and by the water. Now I will have saved you twice too, and there will be no more death between us."
"None," said Vasya with a surge of gratitude and bowed.
The midnight demon stalked into the firelight behind her horse, looking sour. Vasya knew that look. She had worn it herself when Solovey badgered her into something. She almost laughed.
Bujar, said Midnight, I have business far from here, and I cannot be
delayed because your horse is ignoring you, interrupted Vasya. Midnight gave her a venomous look.
Well, then help me now, said Vasya, and you can go about your business the sooner.
The black horse twitched his heavy ears. Pojar looked impatient.
Come on, she said. It was amusing at first, but I am tired of this darkness.
A little reluctant humor came into Midnight's face. What do you hope to do, Vasilisa Petrovna?
He is trapped beyond recall, trapped in memory, in place, and in time. All three.
Vasya was frankly incredulous.
Am I so vain as to think that the Winter King would let himself be imprisoned for eternity for my sake? He is not a half-witted fairy tale prince, and heaven knows I am not Yelena the Beautiful.
So he must have had the reason, known there was a way out, which means I can free him. Midnight put her head to one side.
I thought you besought it, and that was why you were risking the depths of my realm for his sake. But it's not that, is it?
No, said Vasya. Now the midnight demon looked resigned.
Better put your boots on.
She eyed Vasya's half-dry clothes critically.
You are going to be cold.
It did grow cold. The first Vasya felt of it was frost crystals breaking under her boots as she stepped between midnights. The green smell of summer took on a wilder, earthy note. The stars grew sharp as sword points where they were not caught fast in racing clouds. The soft rustling of summer leaves became a dry rattle, and then nothing, only bare trees against the sky. And then, between one midnight and another, Vasya's feet broke through a crust of wet snow. Diet Grieb halted abruptly.
I cannot go on. I will wither.
He eyed the white stuff with terror. Vasya knelt before the little mushroom spirit.
Can you go back to the lake alone? I have to go on.
He looked miserable. His sickly green glow wavered.
I can always go back to the lake, but I promised.
You kept your promise. You found me food. You found me after the flood. She touched his head, gave him another piece of bread from her basket. She said on sudden inspiration,
perhaps you could talk to the other charity for me. Tell them that I...
Yet Grieb brightened.
I know what I will tell them, he said.
That was somewhat worrying. She opened her mouth, thought better of it.
All right, she said, but... Are you sure you won't go back to the lake? Asked Death Grieb.
He gave the snow a look of loathing.
It is dark and cold and the ground is hard.
I cannot.
Not yet, said Vasya. But one day, when this is over, perhaps you can show me where the lisichki grow.
Very well, said Death Grieb sadly.
Mind you tell anyone who asks that I was first.
He disappeared, not without a few backward glances. Vasya straightened and peered ahead. Winter midnights spread out before them, cold copses, ice-choked streams, and perhaps dangers she couldn't see, hidden in the darkness. A chill wind raced down over them so that Pujar, in her summer coat, switched her tail and flattened her ears.
Are we deep in your country now? Vasya asked Polunochnitsa.
Yes, she said.
These are the winter midnights, and we started in summer.
The Domovaya said I couldn't get back, said Vasya, if the season turned.
In the lands by the lake, returned Polunochnitsa, but this is midnight. You can go anywhere you wish in midnight, any place, any season, except that, so far from where you began, you must not fall asleep.
Let's go on then, said Vasya, with a glance at the frozen sky. They walked on in silence. Occasionally, there would be a chink, as Porjar's hoof struck a rock beneath the snow. But that was all. They passed like ghosts over the silent earth. One instant, they would be walking through cloud-torn darkness, but the next moment, the moon would beam down, almost too bright for Vasya's night-adjusted eyes. Then a great gust of wind would tear at her hair. It was getting even colder as they walked. The land wilder. Snow stung her face. Once, Polunochnitsa said abruptly, "If you had tried to use your own bond to the Winter King, you would have died quickly, lost. You were right. It is too capricious, mortal to immortal, and there are too many half-truths between you. But I never, the bear never, thought of the horses." Vasya said, "There is no bond at all now between me and the Winter King. The necklace was destroyed." "None at all," Midnight looked amused. "Misplaced longing was all there ever was," Vasya insisted. "I do not love him." To that, Midnight made no answer. Vasya wished they could linger, for she began to get glimpses of things far off, of cities and festival, on high hilltops, where the shrieks of revelers by torchlight came clearly to her ears. "There are farther, stranger countries," said Midnight. "Places you would have to journey long in the dark to get to. Places that you might never be able to get to, for your soul could not comprehend them. Places that are not a part of your lifetime of Midnights. They are from when your earliest ancestor was born, or when your furthest grandchildren will die. Even I cannot get to all of them. By that I know that one day I will cease to exist, and not every Midnight in the life of the world will know my hand." Vasya felt a little thrill deep inside her. "I would like to see the far reaches of your country," she said, "to feast in strange cities, break Midnight bread in a bathhouse before a wedding, or see the moon on the sea." Midnight glanced sideways at her. "You are a strange girl to want that danger, and you have much to do before you can think of journeying, in Midnight or anywhere." "And yet I will think of the future," Vasya retorted, "to remind me that the present is not forever. One day I may see my brother Alyosha again and my sister Irina. I might have a home of my own, a place and a purpose, a victory. What is the present without the future?" "I do not know," said Midnight. "Immortals have no future, only now. It is our blessing and great curse." It was growing steadily colder. Vasya began to shiver. Big, frosty stars showed overhead. The sky was clear through the leafless trees. Now her feet broke through deep snow with every step. Vasya began to stumble, dazed with tiredness. Only fear kept her awake. Finally, Voron and Pojar stopped. A slim creek, blue with ice, lay before them. Beyond that stood a small palisaded village. It was a perfectly clear winter night. The stars lay overhead thickly as water slopped from a careless bucket. The houses had holes for the smoke, not chimneys. The places under the eaves were carved but not painted, and the palisade was low and simple, designed to keep cows and children in, not marauders out. Strangest of all, there was no church. Vasya, in all her life, had never seen a community without a church. It was like seeing a person with no head. "Where are we?" she asked. "The place you sought." Chapter 16. The Chains of the Winter King.
"Morozko is here?" Vasya asked. "This is a prison for a frost demon?"
"Yes," said Midnight. Vasya eyed the village. What here could keep the Winter King imprisoned?
"The white mare? The swan? Is she close?" she asked Pojar.
The mare lifted her golden head.
"Yes," she said, "but she is afraid.
She has been waiting for him a long time in the dark. I am going to find her. She needs me.
Very well, said Vasya. She laid a hand on Pushar's neck. The mare didn't even bite.
Thank you. When you see the white mare, tell her I am going to try and save him.
Pushar stamped. I will tell her. She wheeled and galloped away, skimming the snow and melting it. The cut on her leg almost mended already.
Thank you, said Vasya to Polunochnitsa.
You are going to your death, Vasilisa Petrovna, said Midnight, but there was doubt now in her voice.
Her black stallion arched his neck and blew softly. She scratched his withers, frowning.
Even then, said Vasya. Thank you.
She began to make her painstaking way toward the village. She could feel Midnight watching her go. Just before she was out of earshot, Midnight called, as though she could not help it.
Go to the great house, but tell no one who you are.
Vasya glanced back, nodded, and walked on. She would have expected Morozko's prison to look something like the bear's clearing, or perhaps a locked and guarded tower and he confined, like a princess at the top of it. At least she would have expected it to be a summer place, one where he was faint, powerless. But this was just a village. In winter, gardens slept under snow. Beasts drowsed in their warm stables. A single house in the very center streamed noise and light. Smoke poured from a hole in the roof. She could smell meat roasting. How could Morozko be here? Vasya climbed the palisade and crept toward the great house. She was quite near when the fresh fallen snow of its dooryard quivered and a chert emerged. Vasya halted abruptly. It was the Dvorovoy, the dooryard guardian, and he was not tiny, like all the other Dvorovia she had ever known. He was as tall as she, his eyes fierce. Vasya bowed with wary respect.
Stranger, what are you doing here? He growled.
Her mouth and throat were dry, but she managed.
Grandfather, I am here for the feasting.
Not quite a lie. She was hungry. Diet Grieb's camp rations seemed an age ago. Silence. Then the Dvorovoy said,
You have come a long way, only for the feasting.
I am also here for the Winter King, she admitted low. It was difficult to deceive a house spirit and unwise to try.
The Dvorovoy's eyes measured her. She held her breath.
Go through the door then, he said simply. And vanished once more into the snow. Could it be so simple? Impossible.
But Vasya walked toward the door. Once she had loved feasts. Now all she heard was too much noise. All she smelled was fire. With an odd detachment, she looked down at her hand, realized that it was shaking. Gathering her courage, she went up the stairs between bars of lamplight. A dog began to bark, then another, a third, a whole chorus. Next moment, the door opened, creaking in the cold. But it was not a man who came out, or, what Vasya had feared, several men with blades. It was a woman, alone. She was accompanied by a torrent of warm, smoky air, rich with the smell of cooking. Vasya stood still. Her whole being bent on not fleeing into the shadows. The woman's hair was the color of good bronze. Her eyes were like amber beads. She was almost as tall as Vasya. The grivna on her throat was gold. Gold there was too on her wrists and ears, set on her belt, plaited in her hair. Vasya knew how she must look to this woman, wild-eyed after the long darkness, lips trembling with cold and terror, clothes crackling with frost. She tried to sound eminently sane when she said, God be with you. But her voice was hoarse and faint.
The Domovoy said we have a visitor, the woman said. Who are you, stranger?
The Domovoy? Can she hear?
I am a traveler, Vasya said. I came to ask supper and a place for the night.
What is a maiden doing, traveling alone at midwinter, and dressed so?
So much for her boy's clothes, Vasya said carefully. The world is not kind to a maiden alone. Safer to dress as a boy.
The frown between the woman's eyes deepened. You have no sling, no pack, no beast. You are not dressed to spend even one night out of doors. Where have you come from, girl?
From the forest, Vasya improvised. I fell into the river and lost all I had.
It was almost the truth.
The woman's brows drew together. Then why? She paused.
Can you see? She asked in a different voice. She looked suddenly half afraid, half eager.
Vasya knew what she meant.
Tell no one who you are.
No, she said at once. The eager light faded from the woman's eyes. She sighed.
Well, it was too much to hope for. Come, there are lords visiting from all about and their servants. You will not be noticed. You may eat in the hall and have a warm place to sleep.
Thank you, said Vasya. The tawny woman opened the door.
I am Yelena Tomislavna, she said. The Lord is my brother. Come.
Vasya, heart beating very fast, followed her in. She could feel the Dvorovoy at her back, watching.
Yelena caught the shoulder of a servant. A few words passed between them. All Vasya heard was, get back to our guest, from Yelena.
A strange expression of sympathy crossed the face of the old servant. Then the servant bustled Vasya into a cellar full of chests, bundles, and barrels. Muttering to herself, she began to rummage.
No harm will come to you here, poor maiden, she said. Take off those clothes. I will find you something proper.
Vasya debated arguing, realized that it might get her thrown out.
As you say, babushka, she said, and began to strip. But I would like to keep my old clothes.
Well, of course, said the old servant kindly. Never fling away wantonly.
Eyeing Vasya's bruises, she clucked and said, husband or father's handiwork, I care not. Bold girl to dress as a boy and run away.
She turned Vasya's cut face to the light, frowned dubiously.
Perhaps if you stay here and work hard, the Lord will give you a little dowry, and you may find a new husband.
Vasya wasn't sure whether to laugh or be vexed. The servant thrust a coarse linen shift over Vasya's head. Over that went a length of cloth, hanging loose front and back, then belted, bast shoes for her feet. The servant patted Vasya's cropped black head and produced a kerchief.
What were you thinking, child, to cut your hair?
I was traveling as a boy, Vasya reminded her. Safer. She slipped the wooden nightingale into the sleeve of her shift. The clothes smelled of onion and a previous owner, but they were warm.
Come into the hall, the servant said after a pitying silence. I will find you some supper.
The smell of the feast hit her first, of sweat and honey wine, and fat meat roasted in a great pit of coals at the center of a long hall. The room was packed with people, richly dressed. Their ornaments gleamed copper and gold in the smoke haze. The heat went up, making the air dance, to a hole in the center of the roof. A single star gleamed in the blackness, swallowed by the rising smoke. Servants bore in baskets of fresh bread, dusted with snow. Vasya, trying to peer in every direction at once, nearly tripped over a bitch hound that had retired, growling, to a corner with her litter and a bone. The serving woman pushed Vasya down onto a bench. Stay here, she said, intercepting a loaf in a cup. Sup at your leisure, and see what you can of the great folk. There will be feasting until dawn.
She seemed to mark the girl's nerves and added kindly, no harm will come to you. You'll be put to work soon enough.
With that, she was gone. Vasya was left alone with her meal and a head full of questions.
It is the Lord's sister herself he wants,
said one man to another, hurrying past, stepping on one of the bitch hound's nursing puppies.
Nonsense, said his fellow, with a heavy, measured sort of voice. She is to marry. He will not give her up, even to the Winter King.
He will not have a choice, said the first voice significantly.
Vasya thought, Morozko is here then. Frowning, she tucked the bread into her sleeve and got to her feet. The food made a small, comforting weight in her stomach. Wine heated her limbs and loosened them. No one marked her rising. No one even glanced her way. Why should they? Just then, the crowd parted and gave her a look at the folk around the fire pit. Morozko was there. Her breath stilled in her throat. She thought, that is no prisoner. He sat in the best place, near the fire. The flames gilded his face, cast dazzles of gold on the curling darkness of his hair. He was dressed like a prince, jacket and shirt, both stiff with embroidery, fur about cuffs and collar. Their eyes met, but his face did not change. He showed no sign of recognition. He turned his head away to speak to someone sitting beside him. Then the gap in the crowd closed quick as it had opened. Vasya was left shaken, craning her head in vain. What keeps him here, if not force? Had he truly not known her? The bitch on the floor growled. Vasya, whom the crowd was pushing nearer and nearer the wall, found herself trying not to step on the creature. Could you not nurse in a quieter spot? She asked the dog, and then a man stumbled into her, drunk. Vasya lurched into the wall, sending the bitch up, snapping. The man pinned her against the smoke-darkened wood. Clumsy with drink, he ran a hand down Vasya's body.
Well, you've eyes like green pools at twilight, he said, slurring. But doesn't your mistress feed you at all?
He poked a clumsy forefinger against the side of her breast, as though bent on finding out for himself. His open mouth descended on hers. Vasya felt her heartbeat quick and furious against the man's chest. Without a word, she threw all her weight at him, heedless of the strain on her still sore ribs, and slipped out from between man and wall. He nearly went over. She tried to disappear into the crowd, but the man recovered, seized her arm, and wrenched her back around. A look of injured pride had replaced his smile. All about them, heads turned.
Treat me like that, he said, on midwinter night too. What man would want you, frog-mouthed little weasel?
He looked crafty.
Get you gone. They will be wanting me there at the high table.
Vasya didn't speak, but reached for the memory of fire. The flames in the fire pit blazed up, crackling. Those nearest drew back from the heat. The whole crowd heaved. Thrown off balance, the man's grip loosened. Vasya pulled away from him, melted into the crowd. The heat and the reek of tight-packed people sickened her. Blindly, she made for the door and stumbled out into the night. For long moments, she stood in the snow, heaving for breath. The night was pure and cold. Eventually, she calmed. She didn't want to go back in, but Morozko was there, somehow imprisoned. She must get closer. She must discover the nature of his chain. Then she thought, perhaps the man was right. What better way to go near the Winter King unremarked than as a servant bearing wine? She took one last breath of the icy night. The scent of winter seemed to linger about her like a promise. She plunged back into the maelstrom inside. She was dressed as a servant. It was not difficult to acquire a wineskin. Carrying it carefully, feeling the strain of the weight in her battered body, Vasya slipped through the masses of people in the hall and came to the central fire pit. The Winter King sat nearest the flames. The breath stilled in Vasya's throat. Morozko's head was bare.
The fire gilded the blackness of his hair. His eyes were a depthless and beautiful blue. But when their eyes met, there was still no recognition in his. His eyes were young? Young? Vasya had last seen him, frail as a snowflake, his gaze impossibly old, in the inferno of burning Moscow. "Call the snow," she had begged him. "Call the snow." He had, and then faded away with the dawn. His last words, a reluctant confession. "As I could, I loved you." She would never forget how he'd looked then. His expression, the impress of his hands, were seared into her memory. But not in his memory. The years had disappeared from his gaze. She did not know how great the weight of them had been until she could see them gone. His idle glance found Vasya's, strayed away, lit on the woman beside him. Yelena wore an expression caught between fear and something else. She was beautiful. The gold on her wrists and throat gleamed dully in the firelight. As Vasya watched, Morozko bent his wild, dark head to murmur into Yelena's ear, and she leaned nearer to hear him. What could imprison a frost demon? Vasya thought, suddenly angry. Love? Lust? Is that why he was here, when all Rus was in peril? A woman with golden hair? He was so obviously here because he wished to be. And yet, Rus was in peril because Morozko had yielded up his freedom to save her from the fire. Why did he do that? Why? And how can he have forgotten? Then she thought, if I wanted to imprison someone until the end of days, would it not be best to use a prison that he has no desire to escape? Here in this place, this midnight, humankind can see him. They fear him, and they love him in equal measure. What more can he want? What more has he ever wanted in all the years of his life? All these thoughts passed swiftly through her brain, and then Vasya collected herself and approached the place where the Winter King sat beside the Lord's sister. She held the wineskin before her like a shield. The frost demon bent again to the woman, breathing more words into her ear. A sudden movement drew Vasya's eye. Another man was watching the pair from the other side of the fire pit. His embroidery and his ornaments indicated rank. His eyes were great and dark with pain. The sudden movement had been the involuntary dart of his hand to his sword hilt. As Vasya watched, he let it go again, finger by finger. Vasya did not know what to make of it. Her feet carried her nearer the Winter King and the tawny woman beside him. She supposed that she was meant to drop her eyes, fill the cups, and scurry away. But instead, she walked forward without affectation, her eyes on the eyes of the frost demon. He glanced up and then, looking amused, watched her come forward. At the last second, Vasya lowered her gaze and tipped her skin to fill the cups. A thin, cold, familiar hand closed on her wrist. Vasya jerked back, splashing mead over them all. Yelena managed to turn, keeping the wine from her gown. Then she recognized Vasya. "Go back," she said to Vasya. "It is not your task to serve us, girl." It seemed to Vasya that she was conveying a warning behind the words. Morozko, proud, young, deaf. In his long hands, was dangerous. He had not tried to retain her wrist when she jerked away from him. She was sure now that he did not know her. Whatever bond they'd shared, hunger, reluctant passion, that was gone. "Forgive me," Vasya said to the woman. "I only wished to repay your hospitality." Her eyes did not leave the eyes of the frost demon. His glance, without hurry and without admiration, traced her cropped hair, her thin face, her body. She felt her color rise.
I do not know you, Morozko said. I know that you don't, said Vasya. Yelena stiffened, either at Vasya's words or the tone of them. Morozko glanced at Vasya's arm. She looked too, saw the skin marked white where he'd touched her.
Have you come to ask a favor of me? He asked.
Do you mean to grant me one? Asked Vasya.
Yelena said sharply, Little fool, go away.
Still no flicker of recognition in the frost demon's eyes, but he put out a single finger and touched the inner part of her wrist. Vasya felt her heartbeat quicken under his fingers, though only a little. The tread of her heart had looked upon life and death and things in between without yet faltering. Morozko's glance was quite cold.
Ask, he said.
Come away with me, said Vasya. My people have need of you.
Horror, shock on Yelena's face. He only laughed. My people are here.
Yes, she said, and elsewhere too. You have forgotten. The cold fingers released her abruptly.
I forget nothing,
Vasya said. If I am lying, Winter King, then why would I risk my life to come before you in this hall at midwinter?
Why are you not afraid of me?
He did not try to touch her again, but an icy wind stirred the hall, bluing the firelight and dampening the talk. Yelena wrapped her arms about herself. A hush rippled through the raucous crowd. Vasya almost laughed. Was that supposed to make her afraid? Blue fire? After everything else?
I am not afraid to die, she said.
She wasn't. She had walked down that road. There was nothing in its cold stillness, the great sweep of stars, that could frighten her. Suffering was for the living.
Why should I fear you?
His eyes narrowed. Vasya realized what a stillness had gathered about the fire, like the birds when a hawk comes soaring.
Why indeed, Morozko said, holding her gaze. Fools are often brave, for they do not understand. Leave us, girl, as your mistress bids. I will honor your courage and forget your foolishness.
He turned away. Yelena sagged. She looked caught between disappointment and relief. Not knowing what to do, Vasya slipped back into the crowd, her hand sticky with mead, her wrist tingling where his hand had lingered. How could she make him remember?
Did she displease you, Lord? Vasya heard Yelena ask, with curiosity and censure mingled.
No, said the frost demon. She could feel him watching her go.
But I have never met anyone who was not afraid.
The people drew away from Vasya when she came among them, as though she were stricken with some sickness. The old serving woman hustled up behind her, seized her elbow, relieved her of the wineskin, and growled in her ear.
Mad thing, what possessed you to approach the Winter King so? It is the lady who gives him mead. She takes his gaze upon herself. That is her task. Do you not know what happens to girls that catch his eye?
Vasya, feeling suddenly cold, asked,
What happens? He might have chosen you, you know,
muttered the woman just as Yelena rose to her feet. She was pale, but composed. A deadly hush fell. The blood began to beat in Vasya's ears. In the fairy tale, a father took his daughters into the forest and left them there, first one, then the other. Brides of the King of Winter. The Winter King sent one home with her dowry. He killed the other.
Once they strangled maidens in the snow, Morozko had said, to court my blessing.
Once? Or now? Which midnight is this? Vasya had heard the fairy tale, but she had never imagined it. A woman separated from her people, the frost demon vanished into the forest. Vanished, but not alone. Once he'd been nourished on sacrifices. Morozko and Miedved were alike once, she thought, her lips cold. In the Winter King's face was a clear and unthinking joy, the hawk's hunger when he tears the rabbit to pieces. He got to his feet, took the woman's hand. All around, a new tension began to build. Into the silence came a single sound, the ringing chime of a drawn sword. Heads turned. It was the man with dark eyes, who had not been able to keep his hand from his sword hilt. His face was naked with agony.
No, he said. Take another. You shall not have her.
Many hands tried to hold him back, but he broke their grip, hurled himself forward, and swung his sword at the Winter King in a single blind stroke. Morozko held no weapon, but it didn't matter. With his bare hand, he caught the blade as it fell. A wrench and a twist, and the sword clattered to the floor, sheathed with frost. The tawny woman cried out. The dark-eyed man blanched. Morozko's hand streamed water like blood, but only for a moment. Frost crept over the cut place and sealed it. The Winter King said softly,
"You dare."
Yelena fell to her knees. "Please," she begged, "do not hurt him."
"Do not take her," pleaded the man, facing the Winter King with empty hands. "We need her. I need her."
Deathly silence. Morozko, a line between his brows, might have hesitated. In that moment, Vasya strode out into the open space herself. Her kerchief had fallen from her hair. All heads swiveled toward her. She said,
"Let them go, Winter King."
She was remembering Moscow, walking through the slush toward her own death. It was bitter memory that put the rage in her voice when she said,
"Is this your power? Taking women from their father's halls at midwinter? Killing their lovers too, when they try to prevent you?"
Her voice rang through the hall. Cries of anger rose, but none dared break into the ritual space nearest the fire pit. Yelena's hand crept out and took hold of the man's. Their knuckles were bone white.
"My lord," she breathed, "that is only a foolish girl, a mad girl, who came a beggar out of the snow on midwinter night. Never mind her. I am the sacrifice for my people."
But she did not let go of the man's hand. Morozko was watching Vasya.
"This girl doesn't think so," he said. "No, I do not," snapped Vasya. "Choose me, then take your sacrifice if you can."
Everyone in the hall recoiled, but Morozko laughed, free and wild and so like the bear that she flinched despite herself. In his eyes was a blaze of heedless joy.
"Come here then," he said.
She did not move. His eyes locked on hers.
"Do you mean to fight, little maiden?"
"Yes," said Vasya. "If you want my blood, take it."
"Why should I, when there is another, fairer than you, waiting for me?"
Vasya smiled. Something of his unthinking joy, in challenge, in battle, echoed in her soul.
"What pleasure in that, Winter King." "Very well," he said, drew a knife and lunged.
When he moved, the knife caught the light with a wavering spark, as though the blade were made of ice. Vasya backed up, her eyes on the weapon. Morozko had given Vasya her first knife and taught her how to use it. The way he moved was imprinted on her consciousness, but that patient teaching was a far cry from... She seized a knife from the belt of one of the watchers. The man gaped at her, wordless. The knife was short-hafted, plain mortal iron against the Winter King's shimmering ice. Vasya ducked Morozko's strike and came up on the opposite side of the fire, cursing her rough shoes. She kicked them off, the floor icy on her feet. The crowd fell silent, watching.
"Why come to me?"
he asked her. Are you so eager to die?
Judge for yourself, Vasya whispered.
No, he said.
Then why?
Because I thought I knew you.
His face hardened. He moved again, faster. She parried, but badly. His blade broke her guard and scoured her shoulder. Her sleeve tore and blood ran down her arm. She could not match him, but she didn't need to. She only needed to make him remember, somehow. All about her, the crowd stood silent, watching like the wolf ring when the hart is brought to bay. The hot smell of her blood drove home to Vasya that this play acting was real to them. It had felt like a fairy tale to her, a game in a far-off country. Perhaps he would never remember her. Perhaps he would kill her. Midnight had known this would happen.
Well, Vasya thought grimly, I am the sacrifice after all.
Not yet. Fury filled her. She drove suddenly beneath his guard and dragged her knife in turn across his ribs. Cold water poured from the wound. A sound of hushed wonder came from the crowd. He fell back.
Who are you?
I am a witch, said Vasya. Blood was running down her hand now, spoiling her grip. I have plucked snowdrops at midwinter, died at my own choosing, and wept for a nightingale. Now I am beyond prophecy. She caught his knife on the crosspiece of hers, hilt to hilt. I have crossed 3 times 9 realms to find you, my lord, and I find you at play, forgetful.
She felt him hesitate. Something deeper than memory ran through his eyes. It might have been fear.
Remember me, said Vasya. Once you bid me remember you.
I am the Winter King, he said. And savagely, what need have I for a girl's remembrance?
He moved again, not playing now. He forced her blade down, broke her guard. His knife cut through the tendons of her wrist. I do not know you. He was immovable as winter, long before the thaw. In his words, she heard the echo of her failure. And yet, his eyes were on her face. The blood ran off her fingertips. She forgot that the fire was not blue, and in an instant, it burst into brilliant gold. All the people cried out.
You could remember me, she said, if you tried.
She touched him with her bloody hand. He hesitated. She could have sworn he hesitated. But that was all. Her hand fell away. The bear had won. Tendrils of black mist crept around the edges of her vision. Her wrist was cut deeply, her hand useless, blood sliding down to bless the boards of this house. I came to find you, she said, but if you do not remember me, then I have failed. There was a roaring in her ears. If you ever see your horse again, tell her what happened to me. She swayed and fell on the edge of consciousness. He caught her before she fell. In his cold grip, she remembered a road from which there was no turning back, a road in a forest full of stars. She could have sworn he cursed under his breath. Then she could feel his arm beneath her knees, beneath her shoulders, and he picked her up, carrying her. He strode out of the great feasting hall.
Chapter 17. Memory. She wasn't unconscious, exactly, but the world had gone gray and still. She smelled smoke-tinged night and pine. When she tipped her head back, she saw stars, a whole world of stars. As though she flew between heaven and earth, like that wandering devil. The frost demon's feet did not groan in the snow. His breath made no plume in the cold night. She heard the creak of cold-stiffened hinges, new smells, fresh birch and fire and rot. She was deposited unceremoniously onto something hard and hissed when the shock of it jarred both her bones and her bruises. She lifted her arm and saw her hand sticky with blood, the wrist cut deep. Then she remembered.
"Midnight," she gasped. "Is it still midnight?" "It is still midnight."
Candles flared suddenly, waxen lumps in niches in the wall. Her gaze flew up and found the frost demon watching her. The air was hot and close. To her surprise, she saw they were in a bathhouse. She tried to sit up, but she was bleeding too fast. It was a struggle to stay conscious. Gritting her teeth, she reached to tear a strip of her skirt, found that she could not with one hand useless. Raising her head, she snapped at him. "Did you bring me here to watch me bleed to death? You are going to be disappointed. I am getting used to spiting people by surviving."
"I can imagine," he returned mildly.
He was standing over her. His gaze, sardonic, still curious, took in her damaged face, dropped to her bloody wrist. She was holding it in an iron grip, trying to halt the flow of blood. Her blood was on his cheek, on his robe, his white hands. He wore his power like another skin.
"Why a bathhouse?" she asked him, trying to control her breathing. "Only witches or wicked sorcerers go to a bathhouse at midnight."
"Appropriate then," he said, his voice dry. "And you are still not afraid, with your blood pouring out of you? Where have you come from, wanderer?"
"My secrets are my own," said Vasya, between gritted teeth. "Yet you asked me for my help." "I did," she said, "and you cut my wrist open."
"You knew that was going to happen the instant you challenged me."
"Very well," she said. "Wondering who I am? Then help me. Otherwise you will never know."
He did not answer, and when he moved, she did not hear him, only felt a breath of cold air, strange in the heat of the room. He knelt before her. Their eyes met. She saw a flicker of unease run through him, as though some small crack, had opened in the wall of ice in his mind. Without a word, he cupped his hand. Water pooled in the palm. He let the water fall into the wound on her wrist. Where the water touched her raw flesh, pain blazed up. She bit the inside of her cheek to keep from screaming. The pain died as fast as it had risen, leaving her shaken, a little sick. The cut on her wrist was gone, and only a line of white remained, catching the light, as though ice were embedded in the scar.
"You are healed," he said. "Now tell me."
He fell silent. Vasya followed his gaze. There was another scar on her palm, where he had wounded her and healed her once before.
"I did not lie," said Vasya. "You know me."
He did not speak.
"You once tore my hand with yours," she went on, "smeared your fingers in my blood. Later, you healed the mark you'd made. Can't you remember? Remember the dark, the dead thing, the night I went into the forest for snowdrops?"
He got to his feet.
"Tell me who you are."
Vasya forced herself to stand as well, though she was still lightheaded. He took a step back.
"I am called Vasilisa Petrovna. Do you believe now that I know you?
I think you do.
You are afraid." "Of a wounded maiden?" he was scornful.
Sweat rolled down the hollow of her spine. A fire in the inner room snapped fingers of flame, and even there in the outer room it was hot.
"If you do not mean to kill me," said Vasya, "and you do not remember me, then why are we here? What can the Lord of Winter have to say to a servant girl?"
"You are no more a servant girl than I am."
"At least I am not a prisoner in this village," said Vasya.
She was near enough to catch his gaze and hold it.
"I am a king," he said. "They make a feast in my honor. They give me sacrifices."
"Prisons are not always made of walls and chains. Do you mean to spend eternity feasting, Lord?
His expression was cold. A single night only.
Eternity, she said. You have forgotten that too.
If I cannot remember, then it is not eternity to